Chapter 18, The Approach to Hell. Ask Hasan a great many more questions about the astral plane and its many curious forms of life, but we were now fast leaving it behind, and passing downwards through those lower spheres which I had partly explored before. We were travelling through space at a wonderful velocity, not quite with the rapidity of thought but at a speed difficult for the mind of mortal to conceive. Onward and still onward we swept, sinking ever lower and lower away from the bright spheres, and as we sank a certain sense of awe and expectancy crept over our souls and hushed our talk. We seemed to feel in advance the horrors of that awful land and the sorrows of its inhabitants. And now I beheld the fuses of inky black smoke which seemed to hang like a pall of gloom over the land to which we were approaching. On and down, these great black clouds became tinged with lurid sulphurous-looking flames as from myriads of gigantic volcanoes. The air was so oppressive we could scarcely breathe, while a sense of exhaustion, such as I had never experienced before, seemed to paralyze my every limb. Of a great black mountain which seemed to jut out into a lake of ink, and from which we saw on the horizon that awful lurid country. After a simple repast consisting of various sustaining spiritual fruits and food which we had brought with us, our leader on behalf of the whole company offered up a short prayer for protection and strength, and then we all lay down upon that bleak mountain top to rest, housed from a delicious state of unconsciousness, to find that the others were all awake also, and were being separated into parties of two or three, in order that we might with less suspicion enter the enemy's country, be scattered as missionary workers over the dark country, to save and help such as we found willing to accept our aid. In surroundings in which I now found myself, put on, or, as it were, clothed myself in a certain amount of the specially coarse materiality of that sphere, no longer gave me so keen a sense of oppression, and the sense of its weighing down my limbs, which had so troubled me before, was gone, was given to each of us, and then a few final directions and warnings were addressed to us by our leader. "And to come from time to time," he said, "to give you news of your beloved, and of your other friends, and you can send a message to them at such times, by me. Always remember that you will be surrounded by every species of deceit and falsehood, and believe no one who comes to you as a messenger from us unless he can give you the countersign of your order, since you are above them in spiritual development, and although you're having to put on to a certain degree their own condition on entering their sphere will enable them to sense a portion of your thoughts, it will be but imperfectly, and only in those matters where your own lower passions still form a certain link between you and them. It's cleverness to tempt and entrap you. There are men who are amongst the greatest intellectual powers of their age, but whose awful careers of wickedness have sunk them to these spheres where they reign over all around them even worse and more despotic tyrants now than they were upon earth. Beware, then, and heed all the warnings we have given you. Sincere friends, until your mission shall have been accomplished and you return, let us hope, as a victor in a good cause. Adieu. Be with you." I parted from Hasan with much regret and set forth with our band upon our journey. The last things we saw as we descended were the white-robed figures of our friends outlined against the dark sky, waving to us their farewell. 3. The Kingdom of Hell. Chapter 19, Through the Wall of Fire. The companion who was assigned to me in this expedition was a spirit who had been in this sphere before, and who was, therefore, well fitted to act as my guide on entering this land of horrors. "We were to separate," he told me, "and each to follow his own path, but at any time either of us could, if needful, summon the other to his aid in case of extremity." "A great bank of smoke and flame," I remarked to my companion upon the strangely material appearance they presented. I was accustomed to the realism and solidity of all our surroundings, which mortals are apartment to imagine must be of some ethereal and intangible nature, since they are not visible to ordinary eyesight. Still these thick clouds of smoke, these leaping tongues of flame, were contrary to what I had pictured hell as being like. In dark and dreary countries and unhappy spirits in my wanderings, but I had seen no flames, no fire of any sort, and I had totally disbelieved in material flames in the palpable form, and had deemed the fires of hell to be merely a figure of speech to express a mental state. "The torments of hell are mental and subjective, not objective at all," said something of this to my companion, and he replied, "Both ideas are in a sense right, These flames and this smoke are created by the spiritual emanations of the unhappy beings who dwell within that fiery wall, and material as they seem to your eyes, open to the sight of spiritual things, they would be invisible to a mortal sight. Could one still in the body of flesh by any miracle visit this spot, they have, in fact, no earthly material in them, yet they are nonetheless material in the sense that all things earthly or spiritual are clothed in matter of some kind. The number and variety of degrees of solidity in matter are infinite, as without a certain covering of etherealized matter even spiritual buildings and spiritual bodies would be invisible to you, and these flames being the coarse emanations of these degraded spirits, possess for your eyes an appearance even more dense and solid than for the inhabitants themselves. My companion's spirit name was Faithful Friend, a name given him in memory of his devotion to a friend who abused his friendship and finally betrayed him, and whom he had even then forgiven and helped in the hour when shame and humiliation overtook the betrayer, and when reproach and contempt or even revenge might have seemed amply justifiable to many minds of by no means perfectly noble character in his earthly life, and had therefore passed a death into the lower spheres near the earth plane. But he had risen rapidly, and at the time I met him he was one of the brotherhood in the second sphere, to which I had so recently been admitted, and had been once before through the kingdoms of hell. We now drew near what appeared like the crater of a vast volcano 10,000 Vesuvius in one total darkness. Now that we have reached the mass of fire I saw that it was like a fiery wall surrounding the country, through which all who sought to enter or leave it must pass. "So," said Faithful Friend, "we are about to pass through this wall of fire, but do not let that alarm you, for so long as your courage and your will do not fail, and you exert all your willpower to repel these fiery particles, they cannot come in actual contact with your body. As of the Red Sea they will fall apart on either side and we shall pass through unscathed. Were any one of weak will and timid soul to attempt this they would fail, and be driven back by the force of these flames, which are propelled outwards by a current of strong will force set in motion by the fierce and powerful beings who reign here, and who thus, as they imagine, protect themselves from intrusions from the higher spheres and more spiritualized bodies. These flames and the walls and rocks you will find in this land are no more impenetrable than is the solid material of earthly doors and walls, and as we can pass at will through them, so can we pass through these, which are nonetheless sufficiently solid to imprison the spirits who dwell in this country. Can it be bound by matter, and at the same time the less direct power can it have in the moving of matter, without the aid of the physical material supplied by the aura of certain mediums? Here, as on earth, we would, in order to move material substances, require to use the aura of some of the mediumistic spirits of this sphere. At the same time we shall find that our higher spiritual powers have become muffled, so to say, because in order to enter this sphere and make ourselves visible to its inhabitants, we have had to clothe ourselves in its conditions, and thus we are more liable to be affected by its temptations. Our lower natures will be appealed to in every form, and we shall have to direct our efforts to prevent them from again dominating us. My friend now took my hand firmly in his and we willed ourselves to pass through the wall of fire. A fiery sense of fear passed over me as we began to enter it, but I felt we were in for it, so exerting all my powers and concentrating my thoughts I soon found that we were floating through the flames forming a fiery arch below and above us through which as through a tunnel we passed. Thinking of it now I should say it must have been about a quarter to half a mile thick, judging as one would by earthly measurements, but at the time I did not take sufficient note to be very exact, all my energies being directed to the repelling of the fiery particles from myself. We found ourselves in a land of night, a bottomless pit of desolation had we not stood upon solid enough ground, while above us was this canopy of black smoke. How far this country extended it was impossible to form any idea, since the heavy atmosphere like a black fog shut in our vision on every side. It extended through the whole of this vast and dreadful sphere, all jagged mountains of black rocks, in others long and dreary wastes of desert plains, while yet others were mighty swamps of black oozing mud, full of the most noisome crawling creatures, slimy monsters, and huge bats. Power and tenacity, encircling and imprisoning those who ventured amongst them. Ere I left this awful land I had seen these and other dreadful regions, but truly neither I nor anyone else could ever really describe them in all their loathsomeness and foulness. This country my sight, gradually becoming used to the darkness, enabled me to perceive the surrounding objects dimly, and I saw that before us there was a highway marked by the passage of many spirit feet across the black plain on which we stood, a plain covered with dust and ashes, as though all the blighted hopes, the dead ashes of misused earthly lives had been scattered there. Arrived at a great archway of black stone hewn into large blocks and rudely piled one upon the other. I thought at first was black gauze hung before the gateway, or that it was made from spirit's hair, with the eyes strung like beads upon it, and, most horrible of all, the eyes were alive and seemed to look at us imploringly and follow our every movement as though striving to read our intentions in coming here. Are these eyes endowed with life? I asked. And continue in the spirit bodies or envelopes from which these eyes have been torn? Eyes of his victims. In this place there are none who have not themselves been guilty during their earthly lives, fiancés of the laws of mercy and justice, for cruelty, and thus they expose themselves to becoming in their turn the victims of beings no more ferocious than themselves, but stronger in willpower and cleverer in intellect. Is the city of cruelty, and those who reign here do so by virtue of their very excess of that vice. These eyes belong, with their degraded, stunted soul germs still imprisoned in their mutilated bodies, are at this moment wandering through the desolation of this land, or laboring as helpless slaves for their spirit tyrants, deprived even of the limited power of sight possessed by others in this dreary land, while between the eyes and their owners there yet exists a connecting link of magnetism which will keep them living and animated by a reflected life till the soul germ shall cast off its present envelope and rise to a higher state of life. Way the curtain of living eyes was drawn aside, and two strange dark beings, half human and half animal, came out, and we took the chance to pass in unnoticed by the guardian of the gate, a gigantic and horrible creature, misshapen and distorted in every limb so that the worst toga of fable could scarcely convey to mortal mind a picture of him. He sprang out with a frightful laugh and horrible language upon the two poor trembling spirits who fled from him in most abject terror, but neither he nor they seemed able to perceive us. On earth, most certainly, but of a very low type of savages, scarcely above the wild beasts, and quite as cruel, hence the reason they are here. The higher form of earth life, and their experience here, which will be short, will give them the sense that there is retributive justice somewhere, although they will be a partment to form their ideas of a god from their dim recollections of the powerful beings who reign in this place, hold the doctrine of reincarnation. Its reincarnation is a law of their progression. Every life has spiritual guardians who from the celestial spheres superintend its welfare and educate the soul by which means as seem best to them in their wisdom, as some term them. Angels differ in their methods and their schools of thought, for there is no sameness anywhere, I am taught, and no absolute path upon which all must walk alike. All spheres, and from these higher spheres their doctrines are handed down to earth through spirits in the intermediate spheres. The end all have in view is the same, but each maps out a different path by which the pilgrim souls shall reach it. The guardian angels watch over the soul germ during all of what may be termed its childhood and youth, which lasts from the moment it first sees the light of individual consciousness till through repeated experiences and developments it attains to such a degree of intellectual and moral consciousness that it stands upon the same level as its spiritual guardians, and then it in turn becomes the spiritual guardian of some newborn soul. I have also been taught that the soul germ in its first stage is only like a seed, like, in fact, any other seed in the minuteness of its size and powers. It is, in fact, a spark of the divine essence containing in itself all that will constitute the perfected human soul. Its very essence it is immortal and indestructible, because it is seed from that which is immortal and indestructible. It has to be sown into the darkness and degradation of the material earth in order that it may germinate, so has the soul seed to be sown into the corruptions of matter, first in its lower and then in its higher forms, the human type being the highest of all. and each seed will in turn develop to the highest degree possible for it through successive spheres and experiences. Schools of thought hold that the soul will progress more rapidly if it is again and again returned to material life to be born anew, in a fresh form each time, and to live over again the experiences it has missed, or to expiate in the mortal form the wrongs done in a former incarnation. The spiritual children of this school of thought will indeed be thus returned to earth again, and for them each new lesson will have to be worked out in an earthly life, but it does not follow that this experience will be the lot of all spirits. Full and expeditious, and with the spiritual children committed to their charge, the totally different course of sending them to gather experience in the lower spheres rather than to earth, will be pursued. Character or individuality, so each must be trained by a different method, else would all resemble each other so exactly that a monotonous sameness would result and there would be none of that variety and contrast which give a charm to earthly life, and I believe will still continue to do so in the celestial spheres. I have ever been taught, therefore, to avoid trying to found a general rule applicable to all spirits upon the experiences of any one community of spirits with which I may come in contact. Even in the visit we shall pay to this sphere, we shall only be able to see a part, a fractional part, of this immense sphere of evil spirits, yet we shall traverse an extent of space far greater than if you had travelled over the whole of the little planet Earth from which we both have come. Draws to like by a universal law, and those of entirely opposite natures repel each other so entirely that they can never mingle or even touch the circle in which each dwells. Thus in our wanderings we shall only visit those with whom either from nationality or temperament we have some germ of feeling, however slight, in common. We were now traversing a wide causeway of black marble, on either side of which were deep, dark chasms of which it was impossible to see the bottom from the great clouds of heavy vapor that hung over them. There were a great many dark spirits, some bearing great heavy loads upon their backs, others almost crawling along on all fours like beasts. Great gangs of slaves passed us, wearing heavy iron collars on their necks and linked together by a heavy chain. City whose dark buildings loomed through the dense masses of dark fog in front of us. The causeway, the style of buildings, and the appearance of many of the spirits made me feel as though we were entering some ancient fortified city of the old Roman Empire, only here everything gave one the sense of being foul and horrible, in spite of the fine architecture and the magnificent buildings whose outlines we could dimly trace. The second gateway was finer in appearance than the first, and the gates being open we passed in with a stream of spirits hurrying through it, and as before we seemed to pass unseen. Here there is a life in no way different from the earthly life of such a city at the time when the one of which this is the spiritual reflection, was in the full zenith of its power, and when the particles of which this is formed were thrown off from its material life and drawn down by the force of attraction to form this city and these buildings, fit dwellings for its spiritual inhabitants. And you will see in the more modern appearance of many of the buildings and inhabitants how it has been added to from time to time by the same process which is going on continuously. Notice that most of the spirits here fancy themselves still in the earthly counterpart and wonder why all looks so dark and foul and dingy. Its spiritual prototype in the higher spheres, to which all that was fair and good and noble in its life has been attracted, and where those spirits who were good and true have gone to dwell. For in the lives of cities as of men the spiritual emanations are attracted upwards or downwards according as there is good or evil in the deeds done in them. And as the deeds done in this city have an evil far exceeded those which were good, so this city is far larger, far more thickly peopled in this sphere than in those above. Heavenly counterpart will be fully finished and fully peopled, and then will this place we gaze at now have crumbled into dust faded from this sphere. We were now in a narrow street, such as it must have been in the earthly city, and a short distance further brought us into a large square surrounded with magnificent palaces, while before us towered one more splendid in design than all the others. Atmosphere we could trace its many wings and buildings. All was true scale, yet all to my eyes appeared dark, stained with great splashes of blood, and covered with slimy fungus growth which disfigured the magnificence and hung in great repulsive-looking festoons, like twisted snakes, from all the pillars and copestones of the buildings. I dozed up through the crevices of the marble pavement, as through the city floated upon a foul swamp, and noisome vapors curled up from the ground and floated above and around us in fantastic and horrible smoke wreaths like the huge phantoms of past crimes. Would by other stronger dark spirits with lash or spear rise of execration as broke forth from time to time, such fearful oaths, such curses and imprecations, it was truly the pandemonium of the lost souls in the infernal regions. Ignite clouds of sorrow and suffering and wrong. Way to the earth my thoughts traveled, back to the days of the Roman Empire, and I saw reflected as in a glass this city in all the splendor of her power, in all the iniquities of her tyranny and her crimes, weaving down below, from the loom of fate, this other place of retribution for all those men and women who disgraced her beauties by their sins. I saw this great city of hell building atom by atom till it should become a great prison for all the evil spirits of that wicked time. Through the lofty doorway and found ourselves in the outer court of the emperor's palace. We passed on through several smaller halls till we reached the door of the presence chamber. Her my companion stopped and said, "I cannot enter with you, friend, because I have already visited the dark spirit who reigns here, and therefore my presence would at once excite his suspicions and defeat the object of your visit, which is that you may rescue an unhappy spirit whose repentant prayers have reached the higher spheres, and will be answered by the help you are sent to give him. His desire for help has already drawn us thus near to him and will draw you still closer. I must now for a time part from you because I have my own path of work to follow, but we shall meet again ere long, and if you but keep a stout heart and a strong will and do not forget the warnings given you, no harm can befall you. Adieu, my friend, and know that I also shall need all my powers." Thus, then, I parted from faithful friend and passed out alone into the council chamber, which I found thronged with spirits, both men and women, and furnished with all the barbaric splendor of the days of the emperors, yet to my sight there was over everything the same stamp of foul loathsomeness which had struck me in the exterior of the palace. Haughty patricians in their lives, no doubt, appeared to be eaten up with a loathsome disease like lepers, only they were even more horrible to look upon. The walls and floors seemed stained with dark pools of blood and hung with evil thoughts for drapery. Ding were the stately robes these haughty spirits wore, and saturated with the disease germs from their corrupted bodies. Throne sat the emperor himself, the most foul and awful example of degraded intellect and manhood in all that vast crowd of degraded spirits, while stamped upon his features was such a look of cruelty and vice that beside him the others sank into insignificance by comparison. But admire, even while it revolted me, the majestic power of this man's intellect and will. Reigned as by a right, seemed to minister to his pride and love of dominion even in the midst of his awful surroundings. Looking at him I beheld him for one brief moment, not as I saw him and as he saw these disgusting creatures round him, but as he still appeared in his own eyes, which even after all these centuries were not open to his true state, his real self. Saw him as a haughty handsome man, with cruel clear-cut features, hard expression, and eyes like a wild vulture, yet withal possessing a certain beauty of form, a certain power to charm. Vile was hidden by the earthly envelope, not revealed as now in all the nakedness of the spirit, and his companions change back to the likeness of their earthly lives, and I knew that to each and all they appeared just the same in their own eyes. All were alike unconscious of the horrible change in themselves, yet perfectly conscious of the change in each of their companions. Were all unconscious. There was one man crouching in a corner, his mantle drawn over his disfigured face, whom I perceived to be fully conscious of his own vileness as well as the vileness of all who surrounded him. To himself, for better things, for a path to open before him which, however hard and thorny, might lead him from this night of hell and give him even at this 11th hour the hope of a life removed from the horrors of this place and these associates. And as I looked I knew it was to this man that I was sent, though how I was to help him I knew not. I could not guess. So far would open up my path and show me the way. Gazing around me the dark spirits and their ruler became conscious of my presence, and a look of anger and ferocity passed over his face, while in a voice thick and hoarse with passion he demanded who I was and how I dared to enter his presence. He continued, "And because we always receive strangers right royally here, I pray you to be seated and partake with us of our feast. The long table in front of him at which many of the spirits were seated, and which was spread with what bore the semblance of a great feast, such as might have been given in the days of his earthly grandeur, looked real enough, but I had been warned that it was all more or less illusionary, that the food never satisfied the awful cravings of hunger which these former gluttons felt, and that the wine was a fiery liquid which scorched the throat and rendered a thousand times worse the thirst which consumed these drunkards. To eat nor drink anything offered me in these regions, nor to accept any invitation to rest myself given by these beings, for to do so would mean the subjugation of my higher powers to the senses once more, and would at once put me more on a level with these dark beings and into their power. I answered, "While I fully appreciate the motives which prompt you to offer me the hospitality of your place, I must still decline it, as I have no desire to either eat or drink anything." Srebuff, his eyes shot gleams of living fire at me and a deeper shade of anger crossed his brow, but he still maintained a pretense of graciousness and signed to me to approach yet nearer to him. Meanwhile the man whom I had come to help, aroused from his bitter meditations by my arrival and the Emperor's speech with me, had drawn near in wonder at my boldness and alarmed for my safety, for he knew no more of me than that I seemed some unlucky new arrival who had not yet learned the dangers of this horrible place. His anxiety for me and a certain sense of pity created a link between us, which, unknown to either, was to be the means whereby I would be able to draw him away with me. When I advanced a few steps towards the Emperor's throne, this repentant spirit followed me, and, coming close, whispered, "Do not be beguiled by him. Not fly from any man, be he whom he may, and will take care not to fall into any trap." Our hurried speech had not been unnoticed by the Emperor, for he became most impatient, and striking his sword upon the ground he cried out to me, "Approach, stranger." "Emperor waiting?" "Elf in it and try for a moment how it feels to be in an emperor's place." "It's like a great chair with a canopy over it." Two immense winged figures in bronze stood at the back of the seat, each with six long arms extended to form the back and sides, while upon the heads of these figures the canopy rested as upon pillars. I had no thought to sit in such a place. Its late occupant was too repulsive to me to desire to go any nearer to him, but had even curiosity made me wish to examine the chair. The sight I saw would have effectually prevented me. The chair seemed suddenly to become endowed with life, and before my eyes I beheld a vision of an unhappy spirit struggling in the embraces of those awful arms which encircled it and crushed its body into a mangled writhing mass. I knew that such was the fate of all those whom the Emperor induced to try the comforts of his chair. Only for one brief instant the vision lasted, and then I turned to the Emperor and, bowing, said to him, "I have no desire to place myself upon your level, and must again decline the honor you would do me." Then he broke into a tempest of rage, and cried out to his guards to seize me and thrust me into that chair and pour the food and the wine down my throat till they choked me. Immediately there was rush made towards me, the man I had come to save throwing himself before me to protect me, and in a moment we were surrounded by a seething, fighting mass of spirits, and for that moment, I confess my heart sank within me and my courage began to fail. They looked so horrible, so fiendish, so like a pack of wild beasts let loose and all setting upon me at once, aroused all my combative qualities of which I have been thought to possess my fair share, calling upon all good powers to aid me while I grasped firm hold of the poor spirit who had sought to help me. Step by step, the whole crowd of dark spirits following us with wild cries and menacing gestures, yet unable to touch us while I kept firm my determination to keep them off. We reached the door and passed through it, whereupon it seemed to close fast and keep in our pursuers up and bear us away into a place of safety on the dark plain. Skewed companion was by this time in a state of unconsciousness, and as I stood by him I saw four majestic spirits from the higher spheres making magnetic passes over his prostrate form, and then I beheld the most wonderful sight I had ever seen. Envelope, and I saw those four angelic spirits lift the still unconscious risen soul in their arms as one would bear a child, and then they all floated away from me up, up, till they vanished from my sight. At my side stood another bright angel who said to me, "Be of good cheer, O son of the land of hope, for many shalt thou help in this dark land, and great is the joy of the angels in heaven over these sinners that have repented. Speaking, he vanished, and I was alone once more on the bleak plains of hell.